There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 High FM.
Shalom, shalom, and a welcome to Soul to Soul on Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Korach, Tov Shin Pei Dalel, on the eve of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, which will begin Be'ez Hashem tonight as Shabbos starts. A very, very warm welcome to our entire radio family. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for putting on your device and coming to be part of our show, even if you can only come for a few minutes. You can learn so much and change your life in a few minutes. Baruch Hashem, we have the schus to be together. I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu every week, and it gives us schus to spend a little bit of time together. Today's show, as always, is sponsored L'Rufu Shlema, Shlemele Ben Etel, Menachem Ruvain Ben Apesa Yehudis, God Ben Felicity, Shulam Esleya Bas Asna, Elisheva Leia Bas Devoira, Akava Bas Liba Mina B'Seich Shor Choyle Yisrael, amongst all the other Choylem. Be'ez Hashem, we daven that all the Choylem here in Yisrael, everywhere, should have Refuah Shleima B'Korah of Mamish and be able to once again function properly and do what they need to do, so that can be proper Avdei Hashem in their entire lives. So this week, of course, the highlight is the whole episode of Korach and the whole concept of machlokes and arguments, and of course, and our Torah warns us, v'lei siyeh k'Korach v'chadosai, don't be like Korach and his band, as a warning to keep us away very, very far from arguments and any kind of strife, and chas v'shalom, certainly not to keep a machlokes going, to fan a machlokes, as in fact Rashi brings that Moshe actually ran around and went to seek out Das Navirim in order to try to placate them and to make peace. And that's what the Gemara, in fact, says on the Pasuk. Vayokam Moshe vayelech el Das Navirim. Moshe Rabbeinu got up and he went to Das Navirim. And Reish Lakish says, we see from here that we do everything I can to try to put a damper, to try to put out the fire of machlekes, and Rav says that anyone who sort of supports and encourages a machlekes violates a negative commandment to the Torah. The Torah says, "Don't be like Korach and all of his band." And we know the great tzaddikim, the Agud Kala, the Bnei Socher, brings it in Parshas Pinchas, quoting Rav Menachem Mendel Meiriminov, that the pasuk says there. It says, "Uvene Korach loy mesu." The sons of Korach did not die, and he says, even though Korach, who was sort of the very, very epicenter of the machlekes, even though he already died, nevertheless, Bnei Korach, in other words, his students, those others throughout all the generations who try to precipitate and develop and encourage machlekes, unfortunately, loy mesu, they never died. In every single generation, there's all sorts of opposition from those who encourage machlekes, particularly against the tzaddikim, against the great leaders of the generation. And it says, if you look very, very carefully at these very, very scary words that the Shlach HaKadosh writes in Shar Oisias, he says, take this rule as a standard. The sin of machlokes is much more difficult even than the sin of idol worship. Therefore, he's amazed. Why is it that we see that even the smallest of sort of people that are so distant away that they're Yidden, but Yidden only by name, and they'll jump into a fiery furnace in order not to bow down or serve any kind of foreign idol, but the sin of Machlaikis, they're not so careful at all about, even though it's much, much worse and much more severe even than the sin of Avodah Zarah. Quite sharp words. The Shevet Musar even says, he proves that the sin of Machlaikis is even more severe than Avodah Zarah, because we see that at the time that the Bnei Yisrael were involved in the sin of Avodah Zarah, let's say by the Egel, so then since there was peace between them, so the man never even stopped, right? In fact, it says they actually offered the man to the Egel, right? Even at that time, that their love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to them didn't even stop. But on the day that Korach and his Eda were fighting against Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't get the man. So we see that the sin of Machlokes is even more serious, and we have to do everything we can to avoid it. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Korach, Tov, Shin, Pei, Dalet, Erev Rosh Chodesh, Tammuz, which Bez Hashem will be on Sunday and Monday. It's such a warm welcome for those of you who are joining us at this point. Let's talk Parsha. So Moshe Rabbeinu, at the height of the conflict with Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu makes a declaration and says, "Vayichal Moshe Moed." Moshe got very angry. "Vayomer Hashem," he said to Hashem, "Al tefen el milchosam." Hashem, please don't accept their korbanos. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu had made a showdown where each person was going to bring that Aaron and Korach and his 250 followers were all going to bring a ketores, an incense offering, and the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would choose and send down a fire and burn it, that would be the holy one. Only one person would win. The other 251 would not make it. It was a real game of Russian roulette. And Moshe davens, Hashem, please, don't accept their korbanos. Now the Chidah in Pesach Inayim brings down that he saw in a new sefer called Binyan Shleimai that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Amrav Alexandri, anyone who learns Torah lishma for its own sake, so he creates shalom, peace, even in the heavenly court and down here on earth. As it says, Ayachazik abimuzi yase shalom li, someone who holds on to my strength will make shalom for me, shalom yase li. He'll make shalom for me. And the Chidah explains that what do you mean? What does it mean? There's machlekes, there's fighting in Shemayim that they need to make shalom. Why would there be? There's no jealousy over there. There's no hatred over there. There's no competition over there. What does it mean that you have to make peace over there? Furthermore, from the pasuk that says Yaseh Shalom Li, makes peace for me, Kaviyachov, such thing could be said that you're making peace with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an unbelievable statement. Who's going to say to us, what do you mean? How are we going to tell? Go and make peace to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he explains, and he says that it's well known that the way it's set up in heaven, the way the kingdom is set up in heaven, mirrors the way kingdoms are set down here, so that we get an idea a little bit of what's going on in Shemayim. And this is, it's well known anywhere, that whenever two people have a fight, so each one in his anger will sort of do a surgery on the other person, cut him up, spit him out, say anything you can possibly say about him, every insult, every character flaw you can possibly try to find in this person, he will publicize to the whole world, right? And certainly if it's a spiritual blemish, if he's not perfect in his Torah and mitzvahs or in his midas, wow, are you gonna really gonna go to town with that? Both the hidden midas, the revealed midas, and whether he's a tzaddik or not, and you're gonna do everything you can to blast that person, to tarnish his name. And certainly when you're fighting. Right, so we'll do the very, very best to destroy each other, and of course, one thing leads to a bad one, avera gereres avera, one avera leads to another, etc. So, let's, if you can say such a thing, let's take something like that as an example to understand a little bit of what goes on in Shemayim, because. Even we know, even the most people that are so distant, God forbids, from Torah and mitzvahs. So we know the Gemara says they are full of mitzvahs. And every single mitzvah that a person does, he buys him an advocate, an attorney for him to speak for him, to represent him in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kisei HaKavod. And when there is any kind of a machloikis, any kind of a fight going on down here amongst the Jewish people, and each person is hoping and wanting and waiting to do whatever he can to destroy his friend and speak terrible, terrible things about him. So every single word that is said makes a terrible, terrible impression. Because you realize that even the curses of a very, very normal, sort of strange person are very, very serious. And each one is actually davening Hashem, that Hashem should help him and knock down and destroy the other person. And the malachim that are created through the mitzvahs of each one of them. So each one has his supporting malachim advocating for him in front of the Kisei HaKavod. So there's this fight going on. And the malachim or the first one are mentioning all of his mitzvahs and all the averis of the other one. And then the malachim of the other one are mentioning his mitzvahs and all the averis of the other one. And therefore, It's leaving a terrible, terrible impression. And it leaves room for midas hadin, for the midah of strict justice to come to bear. And both of them can end up getting punished. And that's what it means. There can be a machloikis, a fight in the heavenly court. In other words, the malachim that were created from the mitzvahs of every single person involved in the quarrel and the fight, they are fighting, and they're both trying to advocate for the one that created them and against the other person. And if someone learns Torah for his own sake, so such a person, as the Alva says, he's called a Reya, called a friend, he's called beloved, he's called someone who loves the other people, he brings them close to Torah, he makes people happy. And through this love of other people, so then his words have tremendous immense effect. People listen to him, and he can make peace between one person and another person. He can bring love into the hearts of one person vis-a-vis another person. Each person speaks good about the other person, and therefore he has the ability, this person has the ability to create peace and harmony down here. And if he creates peace down here, that creates peace also in Shemayim between the malachim of each one of the warring sides. And And even such thing can even be said, it makes it easy, makes it peaceful for HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. Because Hashem's midah of mercy is to have compassion on the Jewish nation. And obviously those who are the accusing angels, they want to arouse the strict justice. And all the different sides, the camps that are involved in the argument, so they bring terrible, terrible accusations in Shemayim against the other person. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is then forced, unfortunately, to utilize the midah of strict justice. Because the midah of din doesn't allow him to have compassion. And it's against Hashem's own will. Because Hashem by nature is rachum. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Baal HaRachmim. He's the master of mercy. But when there's fights, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands are tied, so to speak. And he has to do what he's told. So it comes out when two Jews are fighting between them, so they cause that even the malachim that were created from their mitzvahs are fighting between them. And therefore we daven, Oyeh Shalom b'Mraimav, Hashem, who makes peace in his highest places, Hu Yaseh Shalom Aleinu, because any fight that takes place down here causes a fight also in Shemayim. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says that a tzaddik has special powers, that he can actually nullify and cancel out the mitzvahs of Rishoyim. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. Don't accept a mincha. Even the mitzvahs that Korach has done, cancel them. Don't let them to come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and create a fight in heaven. And if we can avoid the fight in heaven, then there can also be shalom down here. The Rishoyim can get punished, and peace and harmony can reign amongst the Jewish nation. This is 1.9. Chai Fan. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
1.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Korach Tov Shin Pei Dalel. As you prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos. And we're talking this week, of course, we can't avoid talking about it, the issue and the subject of Korach and Machlekes and arguments and how we as a nation can keep our head on straight and pursue the great and beautiful goal of shalom, of peace, which is the greatest virtue that we have. And the Torah tells us that the kind of climax of the whole fight with Korach came when Vatiftach Ha'aretz Etz Piyah, the earth opened up its mouth, and Korach and all of his belongings went down into She'olah, went down to Gehenim. The response of the entire Jewish nation when they saw this, the Torah recalls in Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Lamed Dalet, B'chol Yisrael, all the nation, because Moshe Rabbeinu had gathered the entire Jewish nation to witness the spectacle of the punishment of the person who dared to challenge the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, who did nothing on his own say-so. Everything that he did was on the behest and on the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So he needed them to all witness and see what happens to those who are rebellious, those who fight against the Ashkoch of Hashem. So it says, V'chol Yisrael, all the Jews, Asher Svivaseim, and they gathered around the tent of Korach to see what happened. Nasu L'Korach, they all ran away after the earth opened up and swallowed up Korach. They all ran away and they went back to their tents, Ki Amru, because they said, Pen Tivlo'enu Ha'aretz, lest the land is going to swallow us up also. The Medrash on this Pasuk brings down, what does it mean? All of Klai Yisrael ran back to their tents, that they were all screaming in a loud voice, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hatzileinu, save us, Moshe Rabbeinu. And to try to understand what they thought, what the Medrash means. So let's bring a particular Maisa story that's brought in the Sefer Chemda Genuza in Chelek Beis of that Sefer. There was a great tzaddik whose name was Rav Yitzchak, that he was very, very close to the Rav HaKodesh, Rav Yisrael Meruzhin. And he was a chassid, he was one of his very closest chassidim. And they once suggested for him, for his family, for his daughter, a suggestion of a certain shidduch, a certain marriage partner for his daughter. And they checked out, they did their research as is appropriate, and it seemed to be a very, very appropriate, a very good shidduch. And they even, the young couple, actually even met, and the girl seemed quite happy and agreeable to this shidduch. But Rav Yitzchak himself was absolutely not prepared to agree to the shidduch at all. And the more they tried to convince him and try to prove to him and show him this really how fitting they were and how well matched they are for each other, so he was not prepared to listen at all. He refused, right? But the problem was, when they asked him why, he didn't have any sort of rational reason or any sort of justifiable reason why the shidduch shouldn't go ahead. But he was stubborn, and he does not want this son-in-law, doesn't want this young boy for his daughter. So the family had already sort of, in their minds, decided how they're going to handle this. So they decided to go to the Rebbe, to Rabbi Yisrael Meruzhin, and that he should decide, should the shidduch go ahead or not. The Rebbe paskened that in fact it was appropriate to go for the shidduch, and Be'ezra Hashem, the young couple would be very, very happy, and he requested that Rabbi Yitzchak should come to him. And Rabbi Yitzchak, the father of the prospective daughter, straight away went to the Rebbe, to Rabbi Yisrael Meruzhin, and the Rebbe began and said, I want to tell you a story that took place. It says there was a wealthy person called Rav Asher HaKoshish, Rav Asher the Older. He was a very, very well-known businessman, right, who made a fortune in his business. And he lived in a beautiful, beautiful palace, which was divided into three sort of wings. In one of them, he lived. And in the two additional wings of the building, so his two sons lived there, who were actually part of the partnership. They were partners with their father in the business. And they divided up. They divided up the profits, and everything worked perfectly. There was peace and harmony that reigned. Unfortunately, the father passed away, and the sons sat shiva, of course, for their father, as the halacha says. And afterwards, they sat down to divide between them the Yerusha that their father had left for them. But, of course, as so often happens with these things, as they began to do the division, so there began to be a discussion between the two brothers. And one of them claimed that the reckoning, the division, is not correct, and he's got ended up with a lot less money than the other brother. And of course, the other brother claimed exactly the opposite, and the atmosphere began to get a little bit tense, right? All sorts of old frustrations that have been hidden in their hearts began to come out, and the fight between the two brothers
came mamishly the conversation of the whole day, and it reached very, very quickly to the local Bezdin. But even the Dayanim of the town, they found it very difficult to decide and this, how to work out this kind of very, very intertwined machlekes. None of the brothers were prepared to relinquish their rights to the house in which they lived. And eventually we arrived at a situation where these two brothers became adversaries. They were both wealthiest people in the world. They were sort of stuck in one house with just a one wall between them. And this is very, very sad. Machlokes kind of spread its wings over the beautiful palace. The two families continued to insult each other, and they wouldn't even speak to each other peacefully. It was a absolute a stressful situation. And the years passed. The two brothers who were fighting became older. One day, the older brother got his daughter, Baruch Hashem, engaged, b'mazel tov, and the simcha of the Erusin was, of course, in the main entertainment area in the lounge of his house, which was mamish looked like a small wedding hall, and all the important people of the city of the Kila came to wish him mazel tov. But one person, the person who was really the one that could have actually crowned the simcha, his own brother, the only brother that he had, didn't arrive at the simcha. He sat in his house on the other side of a brick wall. He would not even consider to come and to participate in the simcha that was taking place at that time. A few months passed, and it came, the wedding was coming closer and closer, and the older brother, right, couldn't sort of stomach the fact that his own brother wouldn't come and participate in the simcha. And he began to send intermediaries, third parties, friends, sort of joint friends from the past, that they should speak to him, please, cut down the anger and come to the wedding. But the younger brother was not prepared. He closed his ears. He was not prepared to hear even one word on that subject. A week before the chasna, a special delegation with an invitation, beautiful invitation, came to the younger brother. Maybe he would agree to come, but absolutely not. He was stubborn, and he decided to remain in his house and not to come to the wedding at all. The day of the wedding arrived, as was the minig in those days. The chasna would take place at home, in the main courtyard, right? That was beautiful. It was all decorated, and the chuppah was put up. A beautiful chuppah was decorated with flowers and gold and silver. The main lounge mamish turned into a wedding hall. And there were tables and chairs and covered with beautiful coverings. Everything was ready for the chuppah. A few hours before the chuppah, the older brother decided one more time he's going to do something interesting. He put on his wedding clothes, and he goes and knocks on the door of his stubborn brother. The door opens, and he actually walks into his brother's flat, with tears streaming down his face. Says, "My dear brother, please, I'm requesting you, right? My, come, put all our stuff behind us. Let's leave the machlokes. Please, let's make shalom. Please come to the chasna. Let's dance and let's rejoice together. Let's go back to being real, close, friendly brothers." The younger brother was sitting like a piece of stone by the table, and the expression on his face showed everything. He wasn't interested at all in any brotherly feelings, any sort of closeness, and he was said to him, "Have you finished what you had to say? Please leave." The older brother absolutely was broken. He went out of the house and was absolutely couldn't handle the fact that his own brother would not participate in the chasna of his daughter. The chasna began, and all the wagons arrived, and all the beautiful, all the wonderful people came, and the older brother started dancing and with his new son-in-law, and he would keep turning his head towards the opening of the house. Maybe, nevertheless, his brother would sort of overcome himself, and he would come to the chasna again and again. He would look, but as his pasuk says, "Vayifen koyvachai," he turned here and there, and Einish, his brother, wasn't coming. The chasna already was coming to the end, and there comes the mitzvah tants, right? That took place in the main lounge, and the band started playing the songs that usually, the emotional kind of songs that one plays at a mitzvah tants, and everyone took their place and they began to sort of tug on the neshama strings with their music, and the cymbals were going and the drums were going and the violins were playing, and there in his bedroom was lying the younger brother on his bed, put on his house coat and under his blankets, and he could hear the music and the beautiful music, and it affected him. It melted his heart like wax. And in one moment, he got up, and without even thinking, he just got up from his bed with his pajamas and almost robotically walked to the door of his house, opened the door, went into the front yard of his house, and without even being aware what he was doing, traversed a small space from his front yard to the front yard of his brother, pulsating with light and energy. And then he walked into his brother's lounge. The eyes turned. People couldn't believe. Who is this old man in his pajamas walking into the wedding? Many of them didn't even know him. But his older brother saw him and ran over to him and hugged him and sat him down at the head table and whispered in his ear, "Why did you have to embarrass yourself? Why did you come now in your pajamas? Why couldn't you have responded to my invitation earlier and come for the whole wedding and been part of it?" The Rosh Rebbe finished his story, and he said to Rav Yitzchak, who was so opposed to the shidduch that had been proposed for his daughter, and he said to him softly, says, "You should know, Rabbi Yitzchak, sometimes there's a gezeira from Shemayim on a particular shidduch that it should happen. But we know one of the parents is absolutely opposed to that shidduch without any sort of justifiable reason. In such a situation, Loyalenu, there's no other choice but in Shemayim, but to take the parent who is blocking the shidduch to another world, a world that's only good, in order that this shidduch should be able to occur. And you know that the parents of the chosen and the kala are keen to really have the shidduch go ahead. And in the Olam Elyon and Shemayim, it's also been recommended. And therefore, I'm asking you, Rabbi Yitzchak, why do you want to arrive at your daughter's chasna in a white gown in Tachrichim at a time when you could join and participate in the chasna in beautiful, beautiful clothing, alive and in a good spirit? The words of the original Rebbe melted the heart of Rabbi Yitzchak, who understood exactly what the Rebbe was talking about. And immediately he removed his opposition to the shidduch. Based on this story, we can understand the words of the Medrash. V'chol Yisrael nasu l'kailam. All of them ran away. They were all screaming, Moshe Rabbeinu, save us, save us. In other words, every single Jew needs the help of a tzaddik. But sometime we know that we have the bechira, we have the free choice. Are we going to get the help of the tzaddik in a dignified, honorable way before any tzaras kind of come? Or if we're not prepared to recognize the greatness of the tzaddik, we'll have to unfortunately come to him where we're going to bring to him our tzaras, whatever they might be, and then we'll have to come to the tzaddik that he should daven for us. And he'll cry, Moshe Rabbeinu Hatzilenu. The group of Korach claimed, Ki kola eda kulam kedoshim. Everyone is equal. There's no greater people. Why are Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron putting on airs of being superior to everybody? They aren't. We all stood at Hasina. We're all exactly the same. They don't need the help of Moshe Rabbeinu. But at the time of terrible, terrible tzara, where the earth opened up its mouth, all of them suddenly screamed out and said, Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu, now we recognize you can save us. Only you are the one. And in that impassioned moment, they suddenly realized and were cognizant of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader that they had to look up to and respect. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos, Kodesh, Parshas Korach. Tov Shin Pei Dalet Erev, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, which begins, of course, tonight as Shabbos begins. And a warm welcome to those of you who may be joining us just now. It's a pleasure to have you on board, as we always do at this point on the show, just to go through the important details we need to know for this coming Shabbos. So, of course, this Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. So, the earliest time to light Shabbos candles this afternoon is at 4:23. 4:23 is the absolute earliest you can light your candles. But what a tempting thing it is, just to be able to forget the week, put everything else aside, close the door on all the stuff that's going on, light one Shabbos candles, and invite the beauty, the Kedusha, the ambiance of Shabbos into our homes as quickly as possible. It's doable, definitely. 4:23 is enough time to get the food out and get ourselves bathed and ready and get the house in order. Why not give it a try? You'll see. I'm telling you, if you do it for a couple of weeks, you might end up doing it all the time. It's just such a fantastic, fantastic thing. If you cannot manage to light at 5:23, so we're going to give you a bit of time afterwards. The latest time for benching lit this afternoon is at 5:11. 11 minutes past 5 is the absolute latest time for lighting Shabbos candles, and do not rely on any time after that. Yes, there are 18 minutes from there until sunset, but as we always say, that is only for emergency situations, real emergency situations, not contrived emergencies where people are stuck or something like that and need the time. Then for sure they can use that time until Shkia, which is at 5:29. But normally speaking, we have to regard 5:11 as the absolute beginning of Shabbos. House is ready, the food is hot, the car keys are away, all devices are off and put away, and we are into Shabbos mode. Of course, we really should be in shul by then, because that's usually when most communities begin davening mincha, and to try to make the beginning of Shabbos as holy as we possibly can. As I say, Shkia is then at 5:29. That's the absolute latest time for anything, so that if one wants to make sure that one's davening Ma'ariv and saying the Shema after night, so all you have to do is wait until 5:47. 5:47 is already definitely a night, and then we go to shul and we'll daven a bit and hear a good drasha maybe, and then of course we come home, and Friday night is still very, very long, enough time for a beautiful, beautiful meal, family time together, some singing, some words of Torah, some good conversation, think about the week, and then of course after the meal is over, it's still, come on, too early to go to sleep. Sit open a sefer for an hour or so, right? Go through the parsha, learn some Gemara, learn something. Make it a beneficial and beautiful time. Shabbos is supposed to be a time set aside for ruchnius. Yes, we're allowed to sleep, we're allowed to relax also, but it shouldn't be just the relaxation. Tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Korach. We'll read the parsha. It's not such a long parsha. Quite a lot of Rashi, quite a lot of very, very important Musar lessons. But of course, tomorrow is also Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. So we will include Yalav Yava in the davening, both in the Ma'ariv tonight, and of course in all the tefillot tomorrow. Of course, because of Rosh Chodesh, we also will say what's so called half Hallel tomorrow. Many of us make a brach over that. Then, of course, comes the laning, but because there's Rosh Chodesh, we take out a second Sefer Torah, and we lane the laning for Rosh Chodesh from Uv Yom HaShabbos, and then the Haftarah is the special Haftarah for Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, the last chapter of the book of Yeshaya. We lane that, and because it's Rosh Chodesh, we don't say Avrachamim or Azkaras. And of course, there is a special Musaf Shmoneh Esrei for Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. It's sort of usually in the Siddurim printed on the bottom of the page or on the side of the page to make sure to say that rather than the regular Shmoneh Esrei for Shabbos. And then, of course, it's a special Shabbos. It's a sprout. Some people have the custom to have an extra special dish just for Rosh Chodesh, so that it doesn't get completely sort of left behind in the Kedusha of Shabbos, a special dessert, a special kugel, whatever it is, something in honor of Rosh Chodesh. And, of course, the day carries on. Tomorrow being the fourth Shabbos after Shavuos, so we're going to read Perek Daled, the fourth Perek of Pirkei Avos, this coming Shabbos, and then Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:03. 6:03 is the end of Shabbos, not the end of Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is always a 2-day Rosh Chodesh, so Rosh Chodesh carries on into Moitzei Shabbos, and Sunday, of course, also with the special tefillahs and things that we do on Rosh Chodesh, which is a weekday. We are learning the Hilchos Shabbos, the laws of care of clothing on Shabbos, and we started last week discussing the concept of sewing on Shabbos. So we said that one is allowed to, let's say, connect two parts of an item of clothing using a safety pin, since this really doesn't resemble a sewing. However, there are some poskim that are strict about that, But generally speaking, halacha follows the more lenient position. One who wants to be makrin, one who wants to be strict and refrain from using a safety pinion that he plans to leave there for a long time. So as they say in halacha, tovay alav bracha, you should get an extra special a bracha for doing that. You should be commended for doing that. And in contrast, a brooch that may be attached to clothing even for an extended period of time, because it doesn't actually connect two pieces of cloth together. Now, in the same way as sewing is also is prohibited by Torah law, so is attaching one thing to another, which is a tolda of toifer of sewing. Therefore, one may not attach papers or pieces of cloth to one another if the attachment is kind of be long lasting. Right, it's prohibited by Torah law, right? While if it's a sort of temporary thing, then the prohibition is an issur drabonon. Can't do issur drabonon either. Similarly, it's an issur daraisa that's forbidden by Torah law to sort of staple papers together. Why? Since, of course, the staple connects the papers, right, with making two holes in it. So that is like literally sewing two stitches. But one may hold papers together using sort of a paper clip, since this is really almost an external kind of a connection and doesn't really join them together actually at all. So any kind of sticking things together like that is going to be permitted on Shabbos, right? We said you could pull a drawstring in order to sort of tighten a hoodie or a jacket, because that's not really sewing, but just sort of normal use of the clothing. Additionally, sort of using the drawstring is completely different from the act of sewing, since it's generally sort of threaded very, very loosely through its casing. And one can also pull closed a kind of drawstring that is threaded through loops at the waist and stuff like that. That certainly one is allowed to do on Shabbos. That's not called a sewing. Now, in the same way as sewing is forbidden, so the opposite, koirea, tearing something, also is forbidden. So fixing any item of clothing sometimes actually requires that it has to be torn in order to be resewn. And this tearing then constitutes the malacha of Korea. We're going to come back in a moment and discuss that. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. Please stay with us. This is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Korach, Tov Shin Pei Dalet, Erev Rosh Kodesh, Tammuz. We are in our last segment. We are talking about the malacha of Korea, the malacha of tearing things. So we said that to fix things, sometimes you have to tear them in order to resew them. And this, we said, is this tearing then actually constitutes the biblical malacha of Korea tearing. Tearing in order to sew is a violation of a Torah prohibition. Now, in the Mishkan, sometimes worms would sometimes chew holes in the curtains. So mending the hole as it would leave the curtain rumpled. So therefore, the curtain needed to be torn apart and then re-sewn. So that's the biblical malacha of tearing for the purpose of sewing. So any kind of purposeful or constructive, which we call in Hebrew for a toeles, tearing is prohibited by Torah law. One example of this, let's say, is taking down a hem in order to sort of lengthen an item of clothing. Right? Non-purposeful, destructive tearing is prohibited only midrabbanan. Right? Tearing, let's say, plastic bags or plastic tablecloths from a roll in order to sort of use them is prohibited by Torah law. Similarly, sort of tearing toilet paper in order to use it is prohibited by Torah law. Right? Some maintain that if you tear it along the sort of the perforation, is taka also a transgression of the malacha of mahade, cutting something to an exact shape. Tearing toilet paper with a shinoi, doing it in an unusual way, is still a rabbinic transgression. Right? And of course, one should see to it before Shabbos that there are tissues or cut toilet paper that has to be part of the preparation for Shabbos, is to make sure that there's sufficient torn paper or tissues in all of the bathroom. If there's mamash a time of great need, such as in order to avoid sort of serious embarrassment, so Chazal permitted violating their abundance, and you could then, in that situation, tear with a shinui. Therefore, if one finds himself in a situation where he cannot wipe himself without tearing toilet paper, may tear it in order to preserve human dignity. But he should do so with an unusual way, such as using his elbows to pull the paper from the roll. He should be careful not to tear along the perforations in that situation. Okay, we're going to speak about this much more next week, but this is all the time we have. I just want to take the opportunity to, first of all, thank you all for tuning in, for being part of our radio family, and to wish each and every one of you a beautiful, warm, both in terms of temperature and in terms of atmosphere, a warm Shabbos, a beautiful Shabbos, and of course, at the same time, a good Chodesh, which they run simultaneously, at least for the first day of Rosh Chodesh, continues also on Sunday. So let's end off by just wishing you a very, very warm and geshmak, good Shabbos, and a good Chodesh.